That was, who was that?
A singer.
Stevie Wonder. A live performance of Higher Ground. That was not the live performance performed in honor of Barack Obama, but very similar and of the like.
Cool.
What did you do before that?
I Want You by Michael McDonald. And I don't know the name of the album. I think it might be Motown, but that doesn't seem right, so. Yeah, I guess the album was called Motown.
Yeah, I don't know if that was a genre or why. I think the genre is Patty's favorites.
Patty's picks.
Patty's picks.
It's not the genre. Well, I suppose it is, because you can label genre whatever you want.
And, gosh, just before that, the Fibonaccis with The Genius.
And I played Hooked on Junk by Katie Lang from the album A Truly Western Experience.
Kings County Queens, the album Big Ideas with whatchamacallit. One word.
Okay. Free Man in Paris by Joni Mitchell from Court and Spark.
The Mothers of Invention. We're only in it for the money. Let's make the water turn black.
And I started us off with Black Cow by... No, that's not plural. Black Cow by Steely Dan from Aja? How do you pronounce that?
Aja. Aja?
Aja? Aja. Aja.
Ja Love? Asia.
Aya?
Asia?
A-J-A, however you pronounce that.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Do you have some more stuff queued up?
I do.
More Thanksgiving celebratory, I didn't know it was coming kind of stuff?
Just random music. Some more random music that probably doesn't have anything to do with Thanksgiving. But I heard you say that you might have some Thanksgiving-ish sort of holiday-ish song.
Yeah, more of a reminder of the holidays coming.
If you played it already, I didn't catch it.
Nope.
Okay, I'll be listening then. But I guess I'm going to play a song first.
Would you like to?
Sure.
I'd like to hear it.
Here we go.
But that's why birds do it. Bees do it, even educated fleas do it. Let's do it, let's fall in love. In Spain, the best upper sets do it. Lithuanians and let's do it, let's do it, let's fall in love. The Dutch in North Amsterdam do it, not to mention the Finns. Folks in Siam do it, think of Siamese twins. Some Argentines without means do it. People say in Boston even beans do it. Let's do it, let's fall in love. Romantic sponges, they say, do it. Oysters down in Oyster Bay, do it. Let's do it, let's fall in love. Cold Cape Cod clams, against their wish, do it. Even lazy jellyfish, do it. Let's do it, let's fall in love. Electric eels I might add to it, though it shocks them I know. Why ask if Shad do it? Way to bring me Shad Row. In shallow shoals, English souls do it. Goldfish in the privacy of bowls do it. Let's do it, let's fall in love. The dragonfly. Heaven forbid
dear friends of Free Radio Santa Cruz, we are reaching out for a new antenna location. Our current host is losing their house to the rotten scum banks. So we need a small space for our transmitter and computer box, about 2 feet by 2 feet, and a tree for the antenna, where it sits hardly noticeable. We also have a tower for the antenna if you do not have a tall tree. It uses about 100 watts of power, about the same as a bright light bulb, and an internet connection. The ideal location would be, let's say, between West Side and 41st Avenue. Would you like to help? We can pay in exchange for your troubles. Please contact us. Write an email to frsc@freakradio.org or send a note to FRSC, P.O. Box 7811, Santa Cruz, California. Or, even better, call us during a live show at 831-427-3772. Help us out! We are your community radio.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of breadlines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. A song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. It must be packed with social fact, or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences martial. Tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
And welcome to Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, the December 1st, 2016 edition. I'm your host, Robert Norse, you may remember if you're a regular listener. And, of course, we are streaming at freakradio.org, although we're not transmitting. As you heard from the earlier plea, we're looking for a transmitter site. So thinking that there may be a reward offered. We actually offered a $500 reward and are paying it off to someone who helped us find the current studio space. I know it sounds peculiar to have a studio space but no transmitter site, and that's exactly what we have, however, so that's really where we're at. I'd like you to also say hello to our studio guest, an old-time broadcaster who's been out of town and down in, I guess, Half Moon Bay, no, Moss Landing. All these bays look alike to me. That's Doc Mike, who has had a regular show on Free Radio in the past, and who knows, he may again, but right now he's, I don't know, sojourning, sabbaticaling. What are you doing there, Mike?
I'm living on my sailboat right now and sailing around sometimes.
Ah, so I have to come down and see if I still stay seasick on those things.
Yeah.
I did when I was younger, for sure.
Oh,
couldn't stand
you?
Boats.
Yeah, we'll take you out sailing, sure.
Oh, boy. Well, bring along a barf bag with you, or two or three. That's what I'll have to do.
Yeah.
So, I guess I should begin by kind of, kind of wanted to, sort of let you roll into the studio, and you can, if you have any comments, any of the thoughts that I'm putting out or any of the news bits that I come up with, feel free to,
interject, yeah.
Budge in there or butt in or nudge in, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm hoping to get a report from Food Not Bombs activist and co-founder Keith McHenry at 6:30 on the presentation by Sheriff Jim Hart out at the Aptos High School last night of, numerous community issues, but the one that interests me, of course, is the killing, some say the murder, of Luke Smith, the 15-year-old who was taken down by, when surrounded by 11 police officers from different agencies, by one of Sheriff Hart's loyal deputies in order to, it appears, defend a police dog who was defending against Luke Smith, who may have been defending himself against the dog with a 4-inch knife after it became clear that the guy was having a bad trip of some kind. And that was what, at least that's what they learned later. And it's the second such police killing, some say murder, in about 2 months here in the Santa Cruz area. The previous one was Sean Arlt. And on Saturday, day after tomorrow, we'll be showing up, some of us, led by activist Steve Argue of Liberation News, who is very concerned with bringing the killers of Sean Arlt and Luke Smith to justice, not unlikely as that is here in Santa Cruz or in any other actual city where police officers are involved in lethal killings. They seem to be it's sort of a get-out-of-punishment-free kind of citation or ticket, or they've got a special deal where they can do that. So we'll see how that happens. That's going to be a protest day after tomorrow, 1:30 at the town clock. That'll be between the Thanksgiving/Christmas parade that happens every... It happens every year, actually. And it goes from 10 to 12. And I believe Steve is going to be flyering during the parade. Who knows? Maybe I will, too. I'm not sure what I'll be doing on Saturday morning. But I will be there on Saturday afternoon trying to raise the issue of who killed Sean Arlt. So while Sheriff Hart has given the names of the killer of Luke Smith, Chief Vogel is a bit more bashful, apparently, about revealing who shot down the man with the rake, Sean Arlt. He had a metal rake in his hands, according to the police, who are still concealing the video and the audios. They have the excuse they're using is they passed it on to the district attorney, which I'm sure they probably did, but that doesn't mean they didn't keep a copy or that they can't somehow get access to it. I'm not aware there's any law that prevents them. This seems to be a matter of police discretion, and the police are using their discretion to make themselves unaccountable and non-transparent in this matter, which tends to raise suspicions that there's something unkosher, if you want to use the Jewish phrase, or a little bit stinky and fishy around the police killing and behavior generally. I mean, I've been concerned about SCPD problems regarding homeless people for decades here. And a part of their problem, of course, is they're called upon to enforce bad laws like the sleeping ban, the sitting ban, the panhandling ban. And I use the word ban not because all such activities are completely banned, but because they're so largely restricted that they might as well be banned. They give the police essentially a rubber stamp and a blank check to go after poor people who are engaged in any of these life-sustaining activities. Yes, it's life-sustaining to be able to rest. Yes, it's life-sustaining, obviously, to be able to sleep. And, of course, if you have no money and you need to get food in this society, panhandling is both a free speech right and also a necessity for some, regardless of how much grumbling you may hear from the merchants or how much whining or hate speech you may get from the Take Back Santa Cruz crowd and those, or how, you know, inappropriate it looks to the city planners who want to, you know, present a upper middle class facade so they can lure in more techies to pay high rents and drive away those who are the original natives of the town. Although that, I'm sure they will tell you, is not their objective. They just want more tax money. Anyway, so police departments have a problem here, and I've been concerned about it, as has the organization I work with, HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, for many years. And more recently, we've been doing protests in front of the police station itself, Cop Corner, as we call it, at Laurel and Center Streets. And we did that for 2 weeks, a few weeks back. And we've decided it would be better to move it to the town clock because the town clock is more visible and it's got more pedestrian traffic and it's more centrally located. And so we're going to be there day after tomorrow, 1:30 on Saturday. And we invite everyone in the community to join us. I've posted a small notice of this on the Santa Cruz Indy Media website, so people can read essentially the same thing I'm telling you on the air in case you have a spat of amnesia or something. And that's going to be it. That's at Santa Cruz Indy Media, the Indy Media website. So what are we concerned about? I'll tell you what HUF is concerned about, or at least what I am concerned about, and I believe HUF members support me on this. We want to open the books, the police books, on the use of tasers, batons, guns, pepper spray, chokeholds, and pain compliance holds to determine how often they're used, what the criteria are for using them, who is using them, when they were used, against whom they were used. In other words, we want to see what our police department is actually doing in terms of behaviors that are, if not lethal, that can be injurious to other individuals that... who knows? Maybe that's necessary to do that at some occasions, but let's see the books opened up. That's one thing I'm concerned about. Another is to cut back what is essentially a bloated police budget for the largest department in the state for a city of 60,000. That's a figure I got from another HUF activist, and if anyone has a contrary figure, I'd like to hear it. But we are shoving a lot of money at the police department and Parks and Rec. Most recently, there's been this so-called public safety concern, what I call is a form of anti-homeless hysteria, which happened a few years ago under the mayorship of Hillary Bryant, Lynn Robinson, and then Don Lane, where there was a series of even more repressive laws granting more powers to Parks and Rec Rangers, which even our dear, sweet liberal Micah Posner voted for, who's now leaving office in a week or two, as is Don Lane himself. There's a new city council coming in with two new members, Sandy Brown and Chris Crone, who are actually not that new. Crone's a former mayor, and Brown, while not previously a city council member, was a yes sir, three bags full voice on the Citizens Police Review Board 20 years ago. I don't know much what else she's doing. She's a nice person. She's also one of the few people, and I will give her this credit, who's stayed in touch with well, at least with me as a representative of Huff, who's invited her to come to our Huff meeting and hear the Huff perspective, such as the one I'm giving you now, on what needs to be done with respect to the police department and other issues. But she's never made it there, even though she endlessly, well, twice at least, has promised to come. But she, you know, has some responsibility in the sense that she acknowledges she hasn't. Unlike, for example, Mayor Matthews, who in the past has responded to my emails and sometimes throughout the last year has. But more recently, when I asked her a very simple question verbally, because another activist wanted me to know and she was afraid to approach Mayor Matthews. We don't call her Mayor of Mean for nothing. Cynthia is tart, to say the least, in the sense that she can feel somewhat unapproachable, although I guess different people have different experiences. She was asked, I asked her on behalf of this person what the homeless budget was for the year, and she said, oh, I haven't got that figure with me, but I'll let you know later. And, of course, she never did, in spite of three subsequent follow-up emails. And I regard that as irresponsible in a city official. I know Cynthia and I don't agree. I know that I call her Mayor of Mean. I call her Two-Minute Matthews because she doesn't allow people even, I don't want to call it reasonable oral communications public comment time, but the previously accepted 3 minutes she cuts to two, even if there's only two or three speakers and there's plenty of time for people to talk. And she covers it all with a sort of a smiling, oh, you take a couple of minutes, meaning don't take more than 2 minutes or we'll cut you off and threaten to have you arrested if you don't leave the mic. So we'll see what happens with Sandy Brown. We'll see what happens with Chris Krohn. I got no really new information about either of them. I no doubt I'll have plenty to say as they go into office, which should happen, as I said. I'm not sure if our next council meeting is this coming Tuesday. I don't think so. I think it's on the 13th, not on the 8th. But I could be wrong. I'll have to check on that. But anyway, today, or I should say 2 days from today, on Saturday at the town clock, another issue that I'm concerned with and I think Huff is concerned with is demilitarizing the SCPD, the Santa Cruz Police Department, and refocusing the SCPD from its merchant security squad priorities. That is to say, when you get a complaint from a merchant about a panhandler or a vendor with jewelry on their table or somebody sitting next to a building, I haven't seen this so much in the last few weeks, but in the past few months, I have seen squads of cars show up, four or five officers all showing up to deal with one essentially nonviolent offense that is really something that is an attempt by merchants to privatize a public thoroughfare. And that kind of expenditure is like, helping Forever 21 or The Gap or whatever large store, even New Leaf Market, you know, our very own New Leaf Market, the great pride and joy of the upper middle class here in Santa Cruz, and a local business for sure. But one that supported walling off the sidewalk in front of its business, driving away young people there, and essentially privatizing a significant chunk of the sidewalk, a store that has put in security guards, although admittedly they seem to have backed off in the last couple of years. They used to grab you at the door and demand to see your receipt as you walked out, or at least they claimed you better keep your receipt or the security guard may stop you. And what is this, you know, the NSA, and are we suddenly at the, you know, some sort of place that requires intensive security? It's ridiculous. Although, you know, there are shoplifters, and shoplifting, particularly of food, intensifies as the economy crunches poor people. And I'm sure we're going to see more of that, not just because Trump is the Führer, but because the mayor and the whole city council is in the hands of and the whole city is moving in a reactionary direction. It's concerned with pandering to those who are well-to-do and paying very little attention to those who are struggling to work. You know, I mean, there's some identity politics going on. You know, Cynthia Matthews is going to defend the right to choose Planned Parenthood, but not the right of her Planned Parenthood union to have a union, to have Planned Parenthood workers to have a union which she reportedly squashed several decades ago at the Planned Parenthood here in Santa Cruz. You know, we're getting... Anyway, we're getting behavior from the Santa Cruz Police Department towards poor people. That is one of the issues that will be raised at the town clock on Saturday, along with, the obvious sort of lingering question, where are the videos, where are the audios, where's the name of the officer who killed Sean Arlt, and where's the missing video, because I believe it's my understanding that Sheriff Hart did not reveal all the video. He did reveal some of the video of the killing of Luke Smith, but he didn't reveal all of it. You can find that video, by the way, on the Sentinel website, unless they start, the Sentinels have developed a policy of suddenly interrupting anything you're reading there with an advertisement to pay up or get out. I mean, apparently the Sentinel is adopting this pay now or get lost approach to even toward the Internet, which will now become more and more fashionable. I don't know. I'm going on about this protest, and I'll tell you a few more things, but you have any thoughts on any of this, Mike, that you wish to...
The only thought I had was when you mentioned on Saturday there's going to be a protest there down there for demilitarizing the police. And, you know, what's on my mind is a recent good example of the militarization of police. I know we tried to stop it here a few years ago, tried to stop them getting their MRAP and all that kind of stuff. In North Dakota, where those people are protesting peacefully for the protection of the water there, they've been manhandled by the police force with explosive shock grenades, nearly took somebody's arm off, and also hosing them with water in 25 degrees Celsius temperature. Totally manhandling them. But what I hear yesterday, I think I heard it on the news, that there's 2,000 ex-army people, perhaps not Marines, but ex-army people going up there to defend them right now, you know?
So, well, I know there are people from Santa Cruz who are going, and I know there's also, there's been a protest all day at the Bank of America opposing the pipeline that the Native Americans are and others are protesting up there. In fact, I think when I give a call to Katzenjammer Keith McHenry in about 10 minutes, maybe he can give us an update on that as well.
Yeah, I agree with that. But the point I'm making here, it's a very good example of what happens when you militarize the police and you're living in a police state. So you're out there marching peacefully and you're being manhandled with all kinds of deadly weapons and et cetera by the police force. So there isn't something not right about that, you know?
Yeah. For sure. I mean, the problem is if you give the police the weapons, they are much more inclined to use them. And to some extent, the defense that political protest and political reformers have against this is making sure that the police department is not swimming in money, because they will probably use it, and they won't use it for the protection of the community. They will use it for the protection of what they consider to be the privileged, or what they like to call law and order. And the question then is whose law and whose order? Other issues that we'll be looking at on Saturday that I've suggested, or at least this will be issues I'll be raising, is refuse drug war money, military equipment, drone, face and license surveillance technology, which has been an issue at the local ACLU, which raises very few local issues, but has raised a few, such as the sleeping ban. And it's at least one of the issues they've raised. I would suggest that all SCPD officers be required to live in the city, if not in the local areas that they police, because I think that's how they can be a part of the community, by actually being a part of the community. I would suggest that they end abuse, citations, stayaways, and arrests of poor and homeless people for status crimes. And I've talked a little bit about that before, which has today the crime of, if you're in a park after dark and you've got no place to go, because if you're in the public spaces, you're visible and you're considered to be suspicious. But the large green places where you can actually kind of hide out and get the sleep, maybe, even though it's illegal to sleep after 11 at night in Santa Cruz. It's illegal to even be in those places at night, even though no damage is done to the environment necessarily. And for those who will call in and say, well, what about the poo-poo and the piles of trash, which I will hear repeatedly. And it's not just a false claim. It happens. But I think it happens in part because the city is unwilling to provide alternate facilities, bathrooms, porta-potties, trash pickups. If you have 2,000 people who are homeless outside and you'd like to pretend they're not there, or that you can get rid of them by terrorizing them away, and you don't want to use... If you're going to terrorize them, you better start using more extreme tactics. And I guess that's what Take Back Santa Cruz and others want to do. I think that's what a lot of us have to do, is start defending people in these encampments or living on boats or wherever the hell they happen to be. And then, of course, I'm going to suggest that the police department and the district attorney's office focus on white-collar crime, abuses against workers and tenants. I heard two tenant activists last night on the KZSC show Talk About, which John Sandich does, Cynthia Berger and Zob Hirschfield. And they were spending all their time getting a lot of crap, although they were very polite about it, and so were the crap givers, landlords who were calling in to talk about, you know, the woes of being a landlord and that sort of thing. And so it had these two, I think, moderating what has to be a strong message, is that tenants are being fucked over, not landlords. Tenants are being fucked over. Yes, there are some cases of landlords who get fucked over by tenants. But generally speaking, the profiteering that's going on compared to the ability to pay the rents, it's generally agreed that that's the problem. But you wouldn't know it from listening to that show. And I'm hoping that that can come out more strongly in the future as these two tenant activists proceed. And they're lone voices. I mean, there are some folks working with them, but they really need all the support they can get. If you want to help tenant activists, I don't have their phone numbers or their email addresses right here, but I will get them for anyone who wants to become active in tenant organizing. If you give a call to me at 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, leave a message. I will get back to you and get you the information of the local tenant organization so you can join up and help. Landlords need not apply, is generally their policy. And there's all kinds of specific police officers and police officials that I'm concerned about, and you can read about them and hear about them, and you've already heard about them from me in previous shows, including Bill Azua, Mauro Garcia, the Parks and Rec, Chief Kevin Vogel, Police Chief, Deputy Chief Steve Clark, City Manager Martin Bernal, and Officer Vasquez, the famous guy who smashed Richard Hardy's face down to the sidewalk, or I beg your pardon, he negligently dropped him, or oh no, it was a punishment for kicking the police car, whatever. In any case, these are people who are dressed in armor, lethally armed, and on patrol with your money. And I'm not saying that these guys are bad as human beings when they talk to their dog or they go home to their spouses or lovers or friends. That's not the issue. The issue is how they perform on duty and whether there's any accountability.
It is the issue in one point, because I have known or I intuitively felt that police are more violent than the normal person. I recently looked up those statistics, and the rate of domestic violence among policemen is between 2 and 4 times the general population. So I was right in my intuition.
What's your source?
I forgot. I think I looked it up in the library, but I'll try to find the source.
You better get back to me on that. I don't want you attacking our police department.
No, but it's true.
Well, I mean, I think, as I often said, that the police department as an institution is a deforming body. It just like the city council is a deforming body. It tends to turn ordinary, decent people into functionaries, cogs in a larger machine that requires them to behave in an inhuman fashion. Otherwise, they can't keep their jobs. So I think, and it has to be covered up with all kinds of PR and justification. Oh, he was on drugs. Oh, no.
Covered up with lies.
She was crazy. She had a mental episode. Oh, she should have just followed orders. You name it. You know, we've got all the usual excuses. They were resisting arrest, that sort of thing. And, you know, it's... I'm not saying that in any particular case those can't be a legitimate cause for police behavior, whatever it happens to be. But it becomes such a familiar litany that it's, you know, it's something that has to be closely examined. That's why it's really important for people to use their smartphones, use their video phones as much as possible. And as I mentioned, I believe, I don't know if I've mentioned it or not, I think this video came out after my last show, but... Brent Adams has put out a very important video, I think, that shows a city official, not an armed police officer, not a ranger, apparently. I had said initially that he was a ranger in a something I wrote up for Indy Bay, and that was wrong. He wasn't really a ranger. He was just a city official, according to others who've looked at the video. And he was supposedly picking up trash on the levee, and was also taking people's sleeping bags. And he was saying, "This is abandoned. This is trash." And Brent Adams came up and said, "That's not trash. That's a person's survival gear, mister." He said, "Well, he wouldn't have left it there if he really didn't." I said, "Well, you know, people can't carry their stuff around." Anyway, it's a good video because it's very short, very brief. It has good captions on it. We need people to document what's going on because it's the broader community that is going to turn back this police state fascistization. And it ain't just Trump, folks. It's local, and it's been happening for a long time. And it's the community that has to stop it. So I think what I'm going to do is take a brief musical break after you say something there.
No, I'm just reminding you that it's time to ring Keith.
That's true. And I think while I prepare that, I am going to... what am I going to do? I'm going to play a little music so we can, you know, ease our way forward and see how that goes and like that. Let's see if we can do that.
Cutting your wages down, putting you deeper in the hole. In the long race, bound to the bottom, on the fast track for control. They're marketing the water, getting profits from the sink. Privatizing basic needs, they can't afford a drink. This isn't trade, this is slavery. Subsidizing wealth with poverty. Tearing the land apart, loading forests into trains, justifying long-term devastation with short-term gains. They're jacking medicine prices with the pharmacies stacked. They're patenting local plants and making people buy them back. This isn't trade, this is slavery. Subsidizing wealth with poverty. This isn't trade, this is slavery. Subsidizing wealth with poverty. They're making people servants, locking them in debt, stealing their resources with military threats. They'll buy and sell this whole world with the dollars they possess. By the time they finish profiting, there won't be nothing left. This isn't trade, this is slavery. Subsidizing wealth with poverty. There ain't no end to this bloody chain of poverty and debt. Well, they call it free trade, I call it legal theft. Manifest destiny, the invisible fist of greed. Searching for open markets to plant the poison seed. This isn't trade, this is slavery. Subsidizing wealth with poverty. This isn't trade, this is slavery. Subsidizing wealth with poverty. Subsidizing wealth with poverty.
band. That was Ryan Harvey, Legal Theft. You're tuned to Free Radio, the stream of Free Radio at freakradio.org. On the line with me is Katzenjammer Keith McHenry. Are you there, Keith?
Yeah, I'm here. Thanks for having me. This is really good.
Yeah, and so you just got off of a day of protesting here in Santa Cruz at the Bank of America, and then yesterday you had an encounter with our very own Sheriff Jim Hart, or at least you were there when others did?
Yeah. I went to a event where the Sheriff Hart and the head of the Aptos High School, they held a public meeting. And the idea was that the, to hear from the community what was going on with, about the shooting of Luke. I forget Luke's last name.
Luke Smith.
The 15-year-old person that was shot.
Yeah, his name is Luke Smith.
Sheriff's Department.
Luke Smith. Can you hear me?
I can barely hear you. 1 second, though. I'll be in a situation where I can hear you. So, anyway, yeah. What was your question?
Oh no, I just said that was his name is Luke Smith. So.
Smith, right? Smith.
So go ahead.
And
how big was the crowd there?
It was probably about 50 people, maybe a little more, is kind of unfortunate.
How much of his time was devoted to the Luke Smith killing?
100%.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, the whole point of the event was to talk about Luke's killing.
Okay.
So that's what happened there. And so, anyway, the highlights of it are, his friends from high school, his family, teachers, all these people would get up to a mic and speak. And it turns out that the family tends Inner Light. So Reverend Dee was there, and she spoke originally, about the culture of police brutality and how it's just, it's, instead of being peace officers helping the community, now they're at war with their community all across America, and the Sheriff's Department is no exception. And people were crying when they spoke. Oh, it was really heavy duty. And so then Hart got up to speak, and it was very lore, like he was speaking in reference to a fact that they were going to get a lawsuit. It was like that. So after hearing like an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours of people having heartfelt, distress over what was going on, it ends up that he kind of like basically said, well, we got really good training and, we're really good. And, he mentioned that he had 4 children himself. So he was really, felt bad about his death. But that it was all done, he really just didn't have anything substantial to say. The so-called substantial stuff was that, so eventually he says, well, what many of you don't know is we thought that Luke was 21. Oh, man, the people started freaking out. And one woman says, look, I have a 21-year-old daughter, and I have a 15-year-old son, or maybe 14-year-old son. And this is outrageous, that what's the difference between them being like 15 and 21? It should play no role in what happened. It was very interesting. So that kind of got, so this explodes that these back and, so then Hart like was, okay, well, I guess you're not willing, ready to listen to what I've got to say. And then that's when Reverend Dee got back on this thing and said, look, you can't end it like this. He walked, Hart sat back down and you can't have this be the end of this. People want to know what's going on and they're really upset about this. And you've got to, really finish what you're saying. And people won't, she kind of turned to the audience. We'll let him finish, right? We'll let him finish. And the people go, yeah, let him finish. So then he has even less information to say. It was like really pathetic. And supposedly, like in the first part before he stopped, he mentioned that they arrested the two people that made the LSD or sold the LSD, and one was still in a coma in the hospital. And, you know, like, it was like all the important facts were actually unrelated to really what went on. So it was the public was really upset. So then they were trying to, you know, trying to close it down. And one of Luke's aunts gets up there, and she's like, you know, we just, like, put his ashes in an urn today, and that's like, you know, we're really upset how you are treating us and treating this case. And Luke's aunts also, like, you know, like, really crying and saying how, you know, that, you know, they haven't really been sympathetic. I mean, that there was like controversy about the video because they didn't want the video shown because they didn't want the rest of Luke's siblings to see it. And they had asked for it not to be shown. And so then Hart goes, well, I mean, you put it on YouTube and everything. And then Hart goes, oh, no, we didn't put it on YouTube. We gave a flash drive to the media. And it's like, what? You know, it was crazy. But then, I mean, so there was like this kind of controversy whether there should be transparency by showing it or not, you know, because here the family was, you know, the family had these wishes, but then Hart had promised the supervisors that they would be transparent and show it. So it was this weird kind of situation there.
Keith,
but we ended up...
Keith, can you hear me?
The family.
Keith, did they actually... was the entire video shown, or were only selections of the video shown? Was there any clarification?
No video was shown.
No, I mean the video that was presented previously and then posted on YouTube.
No, that was only of 2 hours. That was only the last 15 minutes.
And so was there only video taken from one perspective, as far as you know?
That they didn't make clear, I know. Hart mentioned that they showed 15 minutes of it. And that, and they, you know, added the captioning and all this stuff to it so you could tell what was happening. And, so that was all he said. Yeah.
Were you able to, pass on any information about the upcoming protest Saturday at 1:30 at the town clock?
Yes, I did. And so potentially the family will show.
Really?
And so to show, I mean, it's a, you know, they're really, you know, they want something done, and hopefully, and a lot of people, there's actually an email list of all the people that were there, which will potentially announce it. And so, you know, it's one of the, it's just like the Sean's vigil, you know, to be remembering him and that kind of thing. It will be really important to, in, you know, to... real, you know, provide an opportunity for them to speak and maybe, I don't know, have a time of silence. You know, like I say, they're connected to Inner Light Church. One of the aunts is from Philadelphia and came here just for this, you know, and she's staying, she's going to stay. You know, it's really, they were so angry and crying, and it was really intense, the whole thing, which, you know, it's... people made so many good points. You know, there was obvious that there was no reason to kill him. You know, video shows clearly.
I couldn't see much in the video. I heard stuff in the video, and I heard the description and read the Sentinel account. But, I mean, I'm wondering, I mean, the way I've described it on free radio, perhaps unfairly to the deputies involved, is that, you know, first they tased him, and maybe they beanbagged him. I don't know if they did do things, but they used some non-lethal approach that they didn't find to be effective. And then they sicked this dog on him, this police dog, and he was, I'm assuming he was defending himself with a 4-inch knife, and the cops were defending the dog. But I don't know, was any of that brought up or discussed?
Yeah, there was talk of that, yeah. You know, because if you watch from the early part, you know, they seem to know that Luke is on LSD for whatever reason, and they're asking him to just come out and so on. But, you know, you look at the video, they were far away. You know, they were a long, long, long way from Luke. So there was no real reason for them to, they weren't threatened. You know, no one's going to get them. No, you know, it was like they could have easily, they were in, sat there and talked to him for a while and not, you know, there was no reason to go after him.
What yeah. weapon was used to shoot him? Do we know?
I don't know. I heard it was an AR-50, but I don't know anything about that. But that's what people.
What is an AR-50?
It's like a semi-automatic weapon. It's just kind of popular nowadays, like a rifle.
And so they shot him with a rifle? I mean, don't you shoot someone with a rifle when you're at a considerable distance from them? I mean...
Yeah, they were. They actually, well, they advanced on them. They basically, you can hear in the video that they get permission to use lethal force. But you're just looking at it going, well, why give permission to use lethal force? He's just a kid and up against a wall acting oddly, you know? He's not doing anything. So they come in with the dog and the guy with the rifle. You know, walk up onto him and shoot him. And it's, you know, he could have just, you know, people should look at the video. It's horrific, though. But the dog is just goes crazy and bites, you know, Luke like dozens of times in the most vicious possible way.
Really?
While he's
you can actually see all that because all I saw was a lot of darkness and, you know, shouting.
You can see the dog grabbing him and just biting into him over and over and over again while he's, like, flailing around. Yeah, yeah. Before that, it's pretty dark, but you can see him occasionally during the conversations. But then when it comes down to it, you know, the video I saw, they, you know, they're just marching up to him and like, for no reason. There's no reason. They could have just, like, let him sit there, you know?
It's their training, Keith. They're just trying to set a good example to police officers that follow. Officers' safety.
Really,
were they heavily armed?
Really,
were they heavily armored, these officers, or you get any impression?
No, they didn't seem to. Yeah, I didn't get that impression.
I've said, well, heavily armored officers, you know, like tack squad-ish, bulletproof vest.
No.
Nothing like that.
No. They just seem like sheriff's department people in there.
Clear.
The other thing that I was... I didn't mention this, and it was not merely mentioned at the hearing, but and I didn't speak. But the, you know, they were there's like a long, just even the amount of time that of the video that is shown, it's clear they could have brought an ambulance to park right there. So if they thought something was going to happen, even if, you know, like for an officer to get hurt, have an ambulance there. But they didn't have that. So... At least it wasn't evident in any of the video or anything. No one mentioned that.
Was an audio tape made of this entire discussion or not?
No, none of it was recorded.
Knew I should have come. Damn.
Yeah, none of it was recorded, not video or audio.
Yeah. Well, at least you were there to hear it and here to report on it. We're talking with Keith McHenry, Funa Palms activist, also concerned with police brutality. You've been a part of the October 22nd National Day of Opposition to Police Violence almost every year.
Yeah, I'm
one
of the founders of that, yeah. Me and a coalition of other activists started that, yeah. And we were connected because of the violence against Food Not Bombs and violence against homeless people in San Francisco. And there was a number of major shootings or strangulations and other things of people in San Francisco. And so, we came up with this idea called October 22nd, No Police Brutality Day, which was essentially our idea was to be 6 months after the Rodney King uprising. So we'd had time to organize between the Rodney King, you know, the protests and Rodney King verdict and all that. So that's how that happened. And then we actually had a thing we started called Stolen Lives, which was to try to document all the people who were killed by the cops. And that was really heavy. There's actually an organization of mothers and who have lost their kids to police shootings. It's insane. And it's, so we, there was an estimate of roughly 50,000 civilians were killed by the police in 10 years. And that was like between 90, I forget when we started that thing, like 93 or 94, something like that, to, you know, that it was ultimately within the 10 years from, I forget even the time span, but we, you had to have, to be considered an officially person who was actually killed by the police, you, to very, yeah, there had to be like something like 3 newspaper articles at least in mainstream media that we could, you know, relate to. And all these walls were made with photos of all the dead. It was like, it was almost the same number of people were killed by the police in the United States during that time period as died in Vietnam during the Vietnam War. It's like crazy. So, you know, very, very, I mean, and now there, and there's been this push to get the Justice Department to actually make all the police departments report all the, you know, deaths due to police activity. And I don't know if that's actually happening, but that was supposed to happen. And that may no longer be happening now that Trump's president. But the other thing is, like, really, I was just at Standing Rock. I can't, unfortunately, I'm, like, kind of overwhelmed with stuff to do in the next couple of days. So, but I will mention Standing Rock, and that was really impressive. And we just got done with this divestment where they shut down the, like, Bank of America just didn't open today because of the action. And it was probably about 50 people. It wasn't nearly as big as we thought, but it was still really good. And Bank of America, Wells Fargo are two of the banks, U.S. Bank. There's a number of banks. There's a divest from Dakota Access Pipeline website. I don't remember the number of the but you can find it. And so people are actually pulling out money from these banks to make sure that they, and protest. Who knows how effective that would be. Certainly publicly blocking them, which happened all across America, is a good strategy. But the, you know, there's huge snowstorm and is blanketing the camps there. And Abby and I were there for 6 days. And there's a Food Not Bombs kitchen that we've been setting up. And that's something I've been spending a lot of time working on for the last, like, 2 months, 3 months. Our people got there on November 1st and with the first load of equipment and firewood and stuff. But it's a really remarkable, you know, the people have seen, like, the dogs attacking the water protectors and then the massive military presence that using, really, it's a sheriff's department and other state police and stuff, and private security that there's Humvees. There's all these, like, armored vehicles and Humvees that are defending this pipeline. And they got sound machine and people, you know, there's been a lot of video about that and it's been real heavy. And so we were, you know, we participated in a lot of the events that were going on there, helped set up the kitchen, you know, did our, some part of that. And slept in a what they call a tarpee, which is like a teepee made of tarps that you can assemble real quickly and cheaply. And they have a wood fire, place in the middle of it. And it was freezing. But, you know, what's amazing is Native people, elders from all these tribes have been communicating with each other, meeting every day. And so there's this unity that is really interesting with the FBI, needless to say, has been for years. You know, I did 3 years at Leonard Peltier Defense Committee, really actively trying to divide Native people. And so there's a real stepping out and reaching out to be united on this issue. And there was probably about 10,000 people at these camps, the Food Not Bombs camps at Rosebud, which is on the reservation across the Cannonball River from the larger camp, which is on the front line. And, you know, it's just really, really incredible. It's like they have an orientation when you get there, 9 o'clock in the morning, and then sometimes one at 1. It had like 100 people at it, at the ones we went to. And it's so valuable to get this orientation. You also, to be media, you actually, you know, like you would have to show that your name, is listed on the Free Radio, Santa Cruz website, or some piece of paper from the collective itself to admit that you know, to prove that you are a bona fide, you know, media person, and they like take your photo and all that, and you copy down all this information from your driver's license and stuff. They're pretty interesting. That they have like a legal tent that you go to if you're worried about being arrested, and everybody should basically be worried about being arrested, and they have an orientation there. And then they have a direct action workshop every day at 2, and it goes for several hours, and you role play and learn all about the potential hazards and dangers and how to deal with being pepper sprayed and water cannon and beaten and all the different potential things that can occur to you when you're like doing a direct action. So it's like very extensive. Massive tons of wood were being brought in to keep warm. There were people building basically buildings all over the place to deal with this, what's going to be a very harsh winter, and already started to be harsh. And there's Food Not Bombs activists from all over the world, including as far away as New Zealand, that are coming to join in the kitchen. And there's like 7 main kitchens in the main camp and 2 in Rosebud. And, people are many, many people mentioned that they just stopped drinking and went there. Many Native people said, this is so important. I spent a life drunk, and now I've never had a drink since I got here. So there's no drugs, no alcohol, and no weapons. And these smear campaigns that keep happening in the media, like one that's recent, is that it's just like a Burning Man, and the elders are mad, and all these white people are there, and it's a Burning Man. Well, we talked to elders. We saw all over the camp, and there was no such thing going on. Now, the only violation of their request that I saw was one person playing a guitar around a fire, and they actually asked people not to do that and to unless they're asked by the elders to do something like that. And there was a prayer on the shores of the Cannonball with like dozens and sometimes hundreds of people, all types of Native, ideas of spirituality are represented and honored by all the other tribes. It's very, pretty amazing. And there's a lot of potential litigation that's going to happen surrounding this against the U.S. government and against, of course, you know, there's efforts to try to get, some kind of, criminal case against the sheriff's department, the sheriff, for all the stuff that's going on there. Although at this point, the North Dakota government is terribly repressive, and I personally feel that's pretty unlikely, and certainly the federal government's not going to step in and do anything if it, you know, it's got like 50 days to do something before Trump's in, and that doesn't look too promising. So anyway, it's a really important thing that is happening there, and there's like more of that happening up in Canada. There's 2 more pipelines that have similar resistance movements happening up in Canada. So anyway, that's pretty much the news that I have here.
Are you likely to attend this local protest at 1:30 on Saturday at the town clock?
No, I actually have to be in Santa Rosa at that time. So I won't probably make that. Maybe if plans change, but right now I'm supposed to be in Santa Rosa. And
well, we will have to speak for you in your absence, Keith.
Okay.
We can read a statement of support, you know.
Okay, maybe I could do something like that. But I'm like I say, I'm really overwhelmed. I have to, my truck died, and I have to get all my stuff out of my van and have it junked tomorrow, and I've got to, I'm going to be away for a month, so I have to organize all the, you know, usually this is a mad time for people buying T-shirts and stuff for the holidays, and I have to set that all up. There's a volunteer that does that. You know, like I've got I'm way in over my head.
Any report says you drowned from the last Freedom Sleepout that you visited, I know, and you, I guess, Abby.
I was there a lot of the time, but I had to go back and help work on a grant for Santa Cruz Food on Bomb, so I did that. Crashed, and then I got up early and came down and did the breakfast.
You want to describe anything that happened there? I know that there was concerns about, some internecine conflict at the previous Freedom Sleepout, and also harassment by either rangers or first alarm security guards or police for people sleeping under the eaves of the buildings or on the bricks.
I wasn't there at that time because I was at Standing Rock, but there was a lot, apparently, So a couple of the people that were there said that the people living on the streets, the Freedom Sleepers themselves, were really upset at the first alarm people. And then that brought in, one person said, Robin said 10 cops came, and they were like, people were so angry about their attempt to force them out into the rain that they, became very heated and screaming and yelling. A lot of people apparently were willing to get jailed. They were so upset that they're being driven out into the rain.
I think there was one. We're talking about Freedom Sleepout 72, not the last one at 73.
Not the last. The last one was very calm, and we'd have conversations with the two rangers, and we got them to not wake up a bunch of people and do anything. So that was good. It was very uneventful. They came to wake people up, and I just talked to the dude and said, "No." Well, I better go. Unfortunately, I've got an incoming call, and I've got to keep on stuff. So thanks for tuning in.
Hey, thank you, Keith. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that was activist Keith McHenry after a day of protest at the Bank of America urging divestment because of its involvement with the pipeline up in Standing Rock area. You're tuned to Free Radio, which is at the stream right now, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris, and the name of this show is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. In the studio with me is Doc Mike, who is maintaining a low profile, but keeping his ear on what's going on. Any thoughts, Mike?
I was going to ask Keith if he knew who gave the order to shoot that young guy, whether it was Chief Hart or if it was somebody else.
Smith. Yeah, I just know that I've got no information on that, and I don't know that any has been broadcast. And I imagine that if an actual name, there was a guy whose name was released who did shoot Luke Smith, and that was, again, transparency on the part of Sheriff Hart. And I probably take issue with the family on this or the relatives by saying that I think it's important the community know this, even though it's a shocker for the relatives for sure. And as for the video, I think that's community property too. I think that's necessary, even though it is painful for the,
exactly,
for the community, the relatives of Luke Smith. But that's my, I haven't thought about it deeply. I haven't talked to the relatives. My opinion on that might change if I, got into it more deeply. In the meantime,
the police usually try to hide the video for their own to hide their own culpability. That's their main reason for hiding the video. It's not to spare the family any suffering. So I don't really believe that story that they're saying.
Well, they aren't saying that they tried to hide the video to spare the family suffering. The family is complaining, if I understand Keith right, that the video should not have been shown and played on YouTube because it caused them suffering. In other words, it's the family that was complaining. And I think you're right. I think I can't second guess the motives of every single police department, but I think there's a tendency when these things happen, my suspicion is, and grounded or ungrounded, that police departments prefer to, work out their own internal discipline and they also want to maintain their reputation as defenders of law and order.
In a lot of cases, they want to hide their mistakes, you know.
And I imagine they don't want their mistakes broadcasted. They're a noble group of warriors and patriots who every day put their lives on the altar of public safety, that sort of thing, which I don't think actually is that accurate. I think, as I said on the show,
they also want to hide their brutality and their ignorance.
And I mean, I'm not interested in so much in doing a police bashing session, though you may find some of that at this protest at 1:30 on Saturday, day after tomorrow, and because there's some folks who are kind of upset about the police, and I think properly so, but I think it's really important for us to be evidence-based. We need the evidence, and we need to demand that they release the evidence. And as I said, I think there are numerous things that need to be done, but one of them is I'm going to take a musical break and.
We see the evidence.
After you say something.
We see the evidence of the police shooting, especially black people, all over this country, every single day almost. That's evidence enough of their ignorance and their brutality.
Well, not every police department is shooting black people, and it doesn't, you know. So, I mean, I think making general statements can be dangerous, but
not everyone, but
you know, but
a lot. A lot.
But I like to because I'm talking about a particular police department. And I relate to some of these police officers from an adversarial position, but not. I want to make sure that I'm not simply tarring them with a brush from some other department, or the fact that the New York cops suffocated to death Eric Garner, or the Ferguson police killed there, you know, or the. I mean, you're quite right. There are almost daily incidents coming out in the papers of police shootings for which the police are essentially not held responsible. It's justified, or it's if the case does get to a jury, you get acquittals. Not in every single case, but the deck is stacked, I think, frankly, against the community in this situation. And that's one of the reasons I'm supporting this protest day after tomorrow, and hope you'll be there. Doc Mike.
I may come into town for it, yeah.
1:30 Saturday at the town clock. Bring signs, bring friends, bring warm clothing. That's going to be 1:30 on December 3rd. Let's hear a little music and we'll be back.
Stacking metal and concrete like a poverty wall. Investors chose this neighborhood to market, buy, and sell. Now there's condos growing like weeds, making the rent prices swell. The place that you were born in, the block where you were raised. The gentrification monster came and put it in its grave. They built a big hotel on the corner to bring the tourists in. Build a new prison wing for the local kids. There's a difference between development and gentrification, as there's a difference between a local shop and a global corporation. Another shopping center full of big box stores undercutting local businesses. They're gonna close their doors at gentrification. Gentrification. Saturate the media with logos and names. You get lost inside that world and you forget to point the blame. But there's a process behind the building based on market rates. So they're pushing you out of your building to make a clean slate. Switching the colors in the neighborhood by switching the class. While some big developer's getting rich sitting on his ass. You gotta pack your bags and hit the road, or maybe hit the streets. Not poor enough for sympathy, not rich enough to compete. There's a difference between development and gentrification, as there's a difference between a local shop and a global corporation. One builds a higher standard that everyone enjoys. The other picks your pockets bare and gives you back the coins. That's gentrification. Gentrification. to the next town. Borders defining counties, borders defining states, determining who profits, determining who pays. They call it development, but it starts with destruction. First they demolish, then they start construction. A violent cycle enforced by cops and debt, one manifestation of a global human threat. There's a difference between development and gentrification, as there's a difference between a local shop and a global corporation. As they market off the cities like products in a store, the rich get richer and the poor stay poor. That's gentrification. 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 Gentrification.
And that's Ryan Harvey, Gentrification. You can find it online on YouTube. Mike, you've been living down in Moss Landing for at least a year now, more or less.
Yes.
How are police treating poor people down there? Or I guess it's the deputies.
You hardly ever see a police person around there. So it's, in that sense, it's good, you know? It's pretty orderly.
And what's the makeup of the community? Is it mostly well-to-do, poor, mixed? What's the story?
There's not many residents down there. It's mainly business shops, and it's boat owners, you know, who have lots of 600 and something boats down there, slips for a boat. So it's a boating community.
And if people have to be fairly well-to-do to have a boat, or are there poor people mainly living on their boats, or what?
It's mostly for fairly well-to-do people who own the boats, because some of the boats are kind of expensive. But there are some people, they only allow 60 people actually to live there in the whole place on boats, you know.
You're one of the 60, or you snuck in there?
Well, I'm legally there up to a point for a certain number of nights, you know. I can stay on my boat.
And are you, I know before you were shivering in your vehicle for some time. Are you one of the wealthy few? I wouldn't have thought that. Are you just like to, you know, shiver in your vehicle to be part of the lower class? Or what's
No, I was never shivering in my vehicle, although I did stay in my vehicle for 6 months or something at one stage, you know.
Is this some sort of a Gandhi-esque solidarity with vehicle dwellers or homeless people? Or why did you do that?
Why did I stay in my vehicle at that time? Because to save some money, because rents are kind of expensive here in Santa Cruz. And I did that when I came here first. I didn't really know too many people, and till I got a feel for the lie of the land, you know?
I'm not going to probe too deeply into that. At some point in the future, perhaps. Phone lines are open, by the way, for those of you who want to call in with accounts of what's going on outside that might not be aware of, any reflections on anything you've heard, how are police officers treating you and deputies treating you here in Santa Cruz and thereabouts in the county. The phone number is 427-3772, 427-3772. Call in and I will I'll answer. We can chat. On Saturday, again, this protest is coming up. But the next day, on Sunday, I do a longer show. And around 11, I expect to have as my phone guest Peter Marin, who is a poet and a homeless activist in Santa Barbara, who regular listeners may remember has been fighting to preserve the rights, or maybe to establish the rights, of people in their vehicles, particularly people in what so-called oversized vehicles or RVs. We've been doing that fight here in Santa Cruz somewhat, some of us in a certain sense, at a certain level. I've talked about how an opportunistic appeal to the Coastal Commission last fall resulted in the Coastal Commission's staff advising the city staff that they'd best limit their nighttime RV parking ban, or it wouldn't pass muster with the Coastal Commission. So the Scott Collins, or he's the assistant city manager. I'm trying to think of an adequate moniker for Scott. Amiable enough fellow, but creator of very nasty laws for poor people. And he's been doing that for a number of years now as Martine Brunel's assistant. Martine Brunel is the city manager and the real boss of Santa Cruz, at least as far as city government goes. That's my view. I should have an interview with him one of these days if he would agree. I kind of doubt that he will. He used to be an amiable fellow when he was the assistant city manager 2 decades ago, but I guess power creates austere distance, and that's what he is now. He seems to have changed. In any case, Peter Maron is successfully fighting, although they have more legal tools in Santa Barbara than we have here. Peter has a connection with a few attorneys, but the attorneys are getting fewer and fewer who want to, you know, risk their time and energy and economic capital on poor people. So that's an issue. But as I've mentioned before, the Coastal Commission's decision, it's first advising the city staff that they better cut back its law. And then when the coastal staff said, oh, that should be fine, you can pass that midnight to 5 a.m. ban on RVs all over the city, period, unless they get a permit from someone who lives here, or unless they're part of a hotel deal that you're visiting at a hotel. That didn't pass muster, surprisingly enough, with the Coastal Commission in August, and so the city RV ban was blocked and is still blocked, and I haven't heard that it's going forward. But as I've mentioned also in past shows, there was a county RV ban that was also passed, apparently inspired by the same kind of bigotry or not in my backyard, NIMBYism, or get rid of them poor bums strategy, or in some cases people are just, you know, they don't want these trashy old vehicles in their neighborhood. And, you know, I guess it's understandable if you want to create a certain quality of a neighborhood around you regardless of other people's needs. Or your answer is let them go to Fresno or let them go somewhere else. But anyway, the county passed this law, and I wasn't even aware when it was passed. After I won this case at the city's Coastal Commission hearing, and the city Coastal Commission said, we're going to have to review this more closely before we'll grant you any kind of permit, and the city has not yet apparently put that back in the hopper, or if they have, I haven't heard about it, of the Coastal Commission. I talked to them by email a week or two ago, the Coastal Commission, and they told me they would notify me if there was any upcoming hearing, which would be what the city has to do before they can reactivate their ban. And although the Coastal Commission's you can't do it in the coastal zone only affects, I think it's about 1 mile into the city coastal zone, because it does affect that zone, as I said before on the show, it really affects the entire RV ban, because if they try to enforce the RV ban, which passed and is law, but is not being enforced, if they try to enforce it, you would think the most obvious thing that RV people would do is they'd move to the coast in the city, and that's where, of course, where the wealthier homes are, and that would not please the wealthier powers in Santa Cruz, and so they can't enforce it if they don't want to offend those folks, assuming that's what RV dwellers do. The same kind of argument applies in the county, which is a much broader area, and the law is also that they passed is worse than the one in the city. It's a broader ban. It's a nighttime ban throughout the night. And I made an enforcement demand on the Coastal Commission that they stop, the Sheriff's Department stop issuing citations, because they were issuing them for people in their RVs in the county. And the response I got from the Coastal Commission was, first of all, nothing. But then after a while and repeated demands, they said, well, yes, well, we've been working on this for several months, and we're conferring with the county staff in order to come up with an agreeable solution. And I read their documents, and what they're trying to do is find a way to ban RVs at night that will still get past the Coastal Commission, having been slapped once on the ass, their staff of the Coastal Commission, which told the city, oh, go ahead and ban them for a more limited period of time, it'll be okay. That didn't work. Now they're, I guess, a little more cautious, but they're still working on that. And they would not allow me or other RV advocates to come into their meetings or discussions. So it remains unclear what's happening. But Peter Maron has been fighting this battle in Santa Barbara, and he will be talking about it on Sunday at 11, for those of you who like to follow this. If you have friends who live in RVs, or you had that experience yourself, or you just care about the rights of people who are poor, and also the insanity of telling people they can't shelter themselves in RVs when there is no shelter. I beg your pardon. There are 50 shelter spaces tonight. As say, there's 50 cots on a floor at the, I guess it's the 7th Avenue Veterans of Foreign Wars. I think that's where they're being bused to. The winter shelter mini program opened up tonight, being bused out from the tannery to 7th Avenue area right outside the city. There was an article in the Sentinel about it at some length. There was a flyer that was put out which talked about show up at, I think it's at 6 o'clock to, let me see if I can find that article.
Is that the old armory, or is it different?
Yeah, you're asking, Mike, if it's the old armory. No, this is the, they aren't doing the armory program. They're instead the Association of Faith Communities, which is the group that has done a kind of a 20-person mini shelter program, which has not allowed people to go out and take a night out, let's say, to do the Freedom Sleepers without telling them that you won't be able to come back. We've gotten some complaints from activists.
They want you there around 5 o'clock, I think, actually.
Right, and I think this particular, this article, New Shelter to Open Thursday in the Sentinel, in yesterday's paper. Mm-hmm. Veterans of Foreign Wars Post 7263 is the one that's on 7th Avenue. Program director is Debbie Bates.
And who's funding that program?
And I think it's being funded by the city, the county, with maybe some money from other communities. But it's only 50 people. It's
50, well, that's not bad.
The other armory had a program of for 100.
Oh, that's right.
And it's also considering there's an outdoor population of 1,000 to 2,000 people and 3,000 in the county. So
it's
essentially horse shit if you're talking about not adequate is a nice way of saying it's a token program. In my view, a little bit more than a token, but not much more. It's a $360,000 program. I think I calculated this at one point. $360,000 for 50 people it's going to be 100 people supposedly starting in January. So in January, February, and March for 90 days, it's going to be so it's 350 people for total of, I can't do the math right now in my head, but it's several thousand dollars per homeless person during that time, and it seems to me that it's the real issue to me, as I've said many a time, is you have to legalize existing encampments, put in porta potties and tents and so forth, and recognize that people need to survive, and that's what they're doing this winter. And if you don't like it, open up your house or, fund a bigger program or, occupy some of the vacant buildings that are, I don't know how many there are in Santa Cruz, but at one time, a couple decades ago, we found there were many even city-owned vacant buildings. I mean, all kinds of businesses are vacant at night. It's really disgraceful what this society does. And
what is this program of
like
50 beds? Where is that being housed or located?
I just mentioned it. Veterans of Foreign Wars, 7th Avenue.
Is that like a house or what?
No,
is that?
I presume it's some sort of a an auditorium or a. It's a. It's a building of some kind where they're going to be.
So there's no actual park or space where people can.
No. There is a space where people will get together. You're supposed to go out to the tannery area, a little bit past the tannery. I saw some people lining up there earlier as I was driving. And I think you have to go through intake. You do get meals down there if you're a part of the program, supposedly. And, you know, it's being billed as a five-fold expansion of the existing community faith shelter. Actually, it's a contraction of last winter's armory shelter.
It's a
shrinkage.
Yeah,
and this PR shit is simply annoying, but, you know, quite, I suppose, not surprising at all. They say that it compares with the program last year, which ran 122 nights for $315,000. But, of course, that program ran all winter, and it dealt with up to 100 people, although usually less, I think, because people found the conditions onerous getting into it. And that, of course, becomes the excuse that you'll hear some critics saying, well, these are service-resistant people that have to be forced into shelters because they don't appreciate that maybe they have mental health problems or they can't stand rules or they're being unreasonable. And the reality generally is that people want to protect their property. You can't take your vehicle up there. You can't drive to the shelter, for example.
Yeah.
You have to go to a pickup point. They aren't giving you a legal place to park your vehicle, as far as I know. And you can't bring your pet with you, as far as I know.
Yeah.
Now, they are giving you a place to store your stuff. But there is a sense of dehumanization that happens in these kinds of programs, where you're treated with a certain amount of either robotically treated or worse, with contempt or disdain.
Yeah. Right?
Because that's the nature of charity, you see. I think people are trying to be charitable. But it isn't really an organic thing that comes from how they feel or a sense of the rights that people have. I mean, you don't treat people in nearby houses charitably. You recognize they have the right to be there. You don't treat your fellow people on the sidewalk charitably. You don't fuck with them because you all have a right to be there. But if people haven't got rights, then charity is what you're stuck with.
Well,
see, that's the problem.
On the other hand, if it's a peaceful gathering, it's better than nothing. You know, it's a lot better than having to stay out in the cold.
A lot of people think it isn't better than nothing because they think they're treated badly in those situations. In fact, numerous people are. That is to say that people in positions of authority begin exercising their authority in abusive ways.
Yeah, sometimes that can happen. Yeah.
I've heard it happen quite frequently over the years in these programs.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, the programs are token programs anyway. They don't really even attempt to accommodate the larger number of people.
But for most people that go, let's say that was in the armory, and I knew a few people who stayed there, they were glad to be out of the elements and at least have a mattress to sleep on. Even though what you say is true, that that may not be the most loving surroundings, but at least they get
shelter.
It's
not a matter of being loving. It is a matter of respecting your dignity as a human being.
Well, that's part of love, you know.
No, it isn't really. It's a part of leaving people alone. I mean, people who live in the, and as I said before, people are passed on the streets. You may not even like them, but you don't treat them like six-year-olds because you can't get away with it.
Yeah,
whereas
the
people who run these shelters can and do get away
sometimes,
with it.
Sometimes.
I would say routinely that kind of thing happens. But you may have had different experiences because you did use the shelters quite frequently, right?
A few times I did.
A few times, yeah. Anyway, that shelter program is available. The pickup is supposedly 4 p.m., drop off between 5 and 6 out on 7th Avenue. The pickup again is 1220 River Street for all of you folks who are looking for a program to go to. And again, you better get there early if on the cold nights, because there will be probably more people than they'll be willing to take. It's 50, and that's the rest of people get to freeze their asses off. It says program capacity 100. That's a lie. It won't be 100 until January 1st. So thank you, Sentinel. And I don't know if I want to thank Debbie Bates, the manager, who I haven't heard too many positive things about either, though, again, quite candidly, I don't want to, I should be talking to her about before I badmouth her too much. Staging area will include 8-foot by 12-foot storage containers, space for a pop-up tent for winter protection. The Homeless Lackawanna Services Center, as I call it, will serve as the association's mentor and fiscal sponsor. I guess they'll start learning to put up gates and have armed guards, or at least guards with demanding ID cards as you walk in. We'll see what happens if I show up there tomorrow, what they try to do to me if I bother to get there at 4 o'clock, which is problematic. The article does admit, well, the VFW site, which is up the one place out in the 7th Avenue that people are being bused to, is expected to hold no more than 50 people daily between now and the program's April end date. It has a capacity of up to 75 that can be utilized before its sister location at the Salvation Army opens, organizers say. Salvation Army on Laurel Street cannot open in December due to its holiday season fundraising activities. So the Salvation Army would prefer to save the money rather than save the people. And why am I not surprised?
Do you know the reason why the Army program closed?
I don't. No, I don't. But I think, you know, it's always been considered a, just like the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, the old Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, which actually helped 80 people a night throughout the year. And it was in addition to the Armory for many years. The Army is very expensive, and the program is expensive because they have to use all this gas to bus people places.
That's true, but I don't think that's too expensive. But the thing is,
I'm speculating, but I think that one of the reasons that they, I'm wondering if the reason that they didn't tell people as they, I think the Association of Faith Communities now does with its 20 people, to go simply to the church yourself directly, is because they didn't trust homeless people, and they were afraid that people who went there would sleep outside if, for example, there was not enough room.
Yeah.
You know, or you know, they would cluster and frighten the neighbors. And I understand how this can be a difficulty because you have a lot of people who have fears about poor people, and you also have this. If you're treating people like animals, and sometimes they'll start acting like animals, and they, you know, and so if people are hungry, they will steal. Some of them will, some of them won't, you know. And the idea of whether it's better to do that than to get thinner and thinner is an interesting question. I know someone's going to call in and say, "Oh, Santa Cruz has plenty of meals." Well, we have a few meals. There's Food Not Bombs, but there's no longer meals at the Homeless Lackawanna Services Center except for those who have a quote pathway to housing, that is those who are willing to, in essence, give over their vouchers to the vultures, that's not fair to say, to the Homeless Lackawanna Service Center workers at Coral Street. And I interrupted you with my tirade there. Mike, did you have something you wanted to say?
No, you didn't interrupt me. I there's nothing much on my mind right now.
Well, there you are. It's.
You know what I'd like to see is... I'd like to see some parks or some, a church or something, given aside for building small mini houses and structures that people can live in. You know, what do you think of that idea?
I hear ideas and I say sure.
I mean,
then I say I don't want to waste a goddamn 10 seconds of airtime on ideas that aren't going anywhere because you have a city council that is
right
wants to essentially drive homeless people out of town.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
what they're doing,
yeah.
And they will of course deny it. But I think that is the impact of their laws, their police practices, and their funding priorities over the last few years. I'm going to turn to, sure, obviously it's a good idea. Campgrounds, tiny houses.
Yeah.
Affordable housing, SROs,
right?
Anything, you know. Come on, get real. Vehicles, boats,
yeah.
You know, empty buildings at night. You know, they're fine. They're all good.
But to say, you know, wouldn't that be a great idea? Let's talk about that for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
No, it isn't worth a shit because talking about it doesn't do anything to create it.
Well, I understand that the...
Not that I'm doing anything to create it either.
I understand that the town council have a lot of acres of spare land around.
Well, there's a lot of green belt. There's a lot of green belt. And you know, the claim is that that's for the use of the environmentally enlightened and, you know, the people who have fancy homes and live here. And, you know, those who don't but who are working for the people who live here. Anyway, I'm going to...
Aren't they spending millions and millions on bike paths and train tracks and stuff?
I think there's some expenditures on that. I don't know how much of it is directly coming out of the general budget. We should probably get some more experts. Maybe I can get former council member Micah Posner in the studio at some point to chat if I can control my grievances against the poor guy.
Did Michael Posner not get reelected?
He didn't run.
Oh, he didn't
run. He'll be termed out shortly, within a week. Let's hear a little bit from Pacific Avenue, and maybe from you. 427-3772 is the call-in number.
Pacific Avenue. Listening to a sunshine man singing. The sun comes out after a rainy day.
On the water, it looks so lovely. Sunshine almost always makes me high. If I had a day that I could give to you, I'd give to you a day just like today. And if I had a wish that I could wish for you, make a wish for sunshine every day.
And I'm down here in front of the Yellow Van mobile art display, which is, of course, Joff and Alex with their vehicle, which has covered one side of it anyway, with many prints, many paintings, parked in front of Forever 21. They've got a crowd of mixed folks, young folks, older folks. Joff is working on his next work there.
Thank you very much.
And people who follow these set of artists regularly, who for about a year defied the performance pen laws of the city on Pacific Avenue, and were multiply ticketed, are now paying off, I don't know, $1,200 worth of citations for doing that after launching a lengthy defense in the court of basement-level Commissioner Kim Baskett. They got some great prints there. If you see them, I encourage you to check out their artwork. It is there. Instead of setting up a table on the sidewalk, they set up their display on their vehicle. And that's how they've been proceeding. Again, the notion that people are being driven off the sidewalks to have to engage in creative solutions like, I don't know, float 6 feet above the sidewalk or hover from a drone or, you know, in this case, have a vehicle and have their stuff on the vehicle. I mean, that's, I'm sure that eventually the city council will try to make that illegal or limit it to a very, very limited areas. And there's some people that continue to ignore these ordinances. I ran into a woman who I interviewed last night who was in front of the Del Mar Theater violating several of the ordinances. She was outside the performance pens. She was showing her
handicraft jewelry, which is now illegal on Pacific Avenue. And she was probably within, I don't think she was in 14 feet of a building, so maybe she was violating two ordinances. But it's all a trip net of ordinances designed to give the police a kind of an absolute power depending on the mood of the merchants nearby or whatever city official happens to stroll by. And it's a very insecure situation for artists. And so we have less artists and less musicians and less vibrant life on the streets as a consequence. Let's hear some more.
And I've just heard from Alex that
his table was closed. They thought he was there, and he wasn't because people were just looking, but no one was there.
Did he have? He had to remove his.
He went to get his drum. You know, this is for you. Can I make it for you? I'm Alex. Make it for you.
And Alex is selling one of his prints.
Okay.
Quick report on what's happening today. From we're talking with Anthony Inman. And Anthony, you have your gnarly works table where you're actually creating something as we speak. Illegal under city law, but forget about that. How's it going?
Pretty good. It's all right. The sales are pretty slow, but nothing biggie. I came out here just to paint and just show off my art, so pretty good.
How long have you been out here?
Since 12, so about like three hours so far.
No hassle required to move along stuff?
Not yet, no, but they talked to some guy down the way, and I don't know if they're letting them stay or they're having to make them leave, but yeah.
Ja, you mean the fellow with the jewelry, or?
Yes, I forgot his name. Yeah, they were talking to John? Yeah.
It's Ja, but I could be wrong.
Okay.
And how long, I guess he took off to get a drum is what I've been told.
They were what?
He was going to get a musical instrument of some kind.
Oh, yeah. I heard, like, if you have a musical instrument, they're, like, more lenient on you. But if you're, like, selling stuff, that's where they're trying to crack down. But
of course, you're a large store selling crap from other overseas.
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of like the shops are kind of mad at us because sometimes we're taking their business. But at the same time, like, people are going to spend their money on whatever they want. So, like, if they see something that I make and they like, awesome. And they see it go in the store and they see something they like, who cares? That's awesome. They're getting what they want. And so, like, me out here doing what I want to do shouldn't be a problem for these companies out here.
They're just stealing profits from Forever 21. They won't buy dresses if you're here. Don't you understand?
Yeah, exactly. But I could be selling dresses, too, out here, and they'll probably be saying the same thing. But who cares? It's the people's choice, I guess. They want to buy, go in the store and buy something, or come out here and buy something. Vice versa. To me, it doesn't really matter. Yeah.
Anything else you've seen today that you want to comment on?
A lot of good-looking girls out here. Yeah.
Come over and offered you a room for the night?
No, I wish, but not tonight, no.
And we've been talking with?
Just a few. Yeah. Yeah, just a few right now. Nothing too big. Yeah.
And you are?
Anthony Inman.
Yeah. Thanks, Anthony.
Green on the wood.
Thanks, man.
Well, I'm here at I'm not quite sure what kind of a table we'd call this.
Therapy table.
At the therapy table, which has a number of items. It has books. It has crystals. It has handmade items. It has a drum.
Drum.
We have a musician here.
Can you hear the drum?
Sure, hit the drum, man. You can hear the man at least knows how to pound a drum. But earlier I heard there was some problem at this. Guys with guns and blue uniforms arrived, and they had some conversation with you of any kind?
Or? Yeah, they heard that my friend got shot by one of their co-workers, and they were sorry to hear that.
Did they reveal the name of the shooter that we've all been waiting to hear for a month and a half?
You know, I'm just trying to heal the town. I'm not trying to point the finger.
I would hope not.
I'm trying to spread the love.
There you go. Here's some love to spread.
And that was Sean Arlt that Ja is speaking of, and he talks further about Sean. Again, reminding you, if you want to spread the love or at least demand the transparency and accountability, who killed Sean Arlt? Where's the video? Where's the audio? Come to the town clock at 1:30 on Saturday, day after tomorrow.
So So they didn't tell you to move?
Yes, they did. They told me everything.
Did they have anything good, perhaps?
They told me that I can't have my stones on the table.
Well, I'm glad to see you've removed them. Oh,
no,
actually,
I didn't remove them, actually.
They're covered.
Put books on top of them.
And their response to that was?
No, that was their idea.
Really?
Yeah.
And did they suggest the reading matter itself, or did you leave that up to you?
They said that I could have pictures of crystals on the books, but I couldn't have real crystals.
I see. Interesting new approach, a new wrinkle to things here on Pacific Avenue. Has this happened to you before? They suggested the book cover or the pseudo pictures instead of the actual crystals?
No, sir.
Have the police been giving you any kind of trouble before this, or have you been kind of okie-dokie, umpy-dumpy with them?
Yes, sir. I have a $631 ticket for not moving every hour.
$631, huh? And what do you intend to do with this piece of paper?
I intend to pay my ticket.
Are you going to fundraise, perhaps, in order to pay your ticket?
No, sir, I'm independently wealthy.
That's always a good thing. Well, at least we're paying tickets.
Yes, sir.
Any advice for aspiring street vendors, musicians, or performers?
Follow your heart! Open your heart! Free your mind!
Sort of what Curtis Relaford says as he trundles off to Standing Rock. Hey, David. Any other thoughts before I leave you in peace?
You are your path! Love your path!
And there you have it. The shouts of wisdom from the sidewalk over the tables, the jewelry, and the books on top of the jewelry. Thank you, Senora.
All glory to you, divine service.
All right, on. On the same day that there's a memorial for Sean Benefit at the Kwanzaa Jazz Center, this is also your way of showing your caring about what happened and your concern.
Every day for the rest of my life, in the beginning part of my day, I will remember this man.
I never knew Sean myself.
Sean wrote the Manifesto of Love.
I remember that being mentioned. I've never read it, but...
Sean cared about the butterflies and the bees. Sean volunteered at the library after school. Sean loved everyone. He cared about everything and everybody. He was a good person. He was a little zany. He was the type of person you maybe wouldn't invite to your birthday party because he'd upstage you on your own birthday. That's the type of person he was.
How well did you know Sean?
I went to high school with him. I loved Sean. Every time I saw Sean, I got a big hug from Sean.
And the last time you saw him was?
Oh, I don't know, a few months ago.
Gotcha.
How did you learn engineering? I don't know.
Any other thoughts before I leave you in peace?
Sean wrote the Manifesto of Love. Sean was a visionary. Sean had a 4-year-old son who is now fatherless. The Santa Cruz Police Department should start a fund for Sean's son so that he can go through college. This is the least they can do.
Yeah, I attempted to... I brought a flyer around to the Sean Memorial because we are doing a rally at the town clock next Saturday demanding that the names of the officers involved, that their video and the audio be released, as well as in the Luke Smith killing that also happened, you may remember, by the deputies. But I was kind of discouraged by the door person. A significant number of people were there. It wasn't packed, but there were numerous folks at the Jazz Center. A few even in suits.
Yeah.
But I think there was. I think Sean's. There's already been a memorial for Sean, I believe. He's already been, had a burial, if I remember from the papers correctly. I could be wrong. I'm concerned that there be some outrage around the policies of the police department that allow this to happen. And that's what I've been concerned about. And maybe some others are concerned, too. But unfortunately, I don't see a lot of concern. I hear you, at least about this particular individual on the street. I think that's good.
They have attempted to militarize the police department. They are continuing to further militarize the police department. And this is the wrong direction. We need to localize the police department. We want the police to volunteer. We want the police to be a part of the community. We don't want to feel subjugated by our own police force because we pay for them. And they are there at the approval and support of the people.
You would hope so, wouldn't you?
Yes.
Well, I have to agree. I have to agree.
Sorry?
And I thank you. We have been talking with or listening to...
I'm a believer in the Manifesto of Love.
Thank you. Up the street here in front of Dale Williams on the sidewalk outside the, well, somewhat outside the box with the items on the sidewalk.
There's only one home in Santa Cruz on the west side.
Slogan on each of these pieces of driftwood that have also been painted. Santa Cruz, Gone Surfing, Santa Cruz Now, Santa Cruz Peace and Love, East Side, Pack Your Trash on the Beach, and the... So I'm talking with an individual who I will not identify until he or she chooses to identify herself. But this person believes that police have been pretty nice to him. Sheriff's not so much, and this person wants to keep a relatively low profile doing the artwork that this person does, which I'm actually standing near the display of this artwork, which I will not describe. However nice it does look, what exactly it is. However, I'll confer with my artist associate here and see if this person wishes to reveal himself or herself and say anything as to who she or he is.
But I don't know if I'm ready.
On
some days I'm. It's so.
You seem okay. I mean,
I do pretty good when I'm not.
So I noticed you're making a new driftwood piece of art, which you not only have carefully painted. Sayings or words on it. Santa Cruz, peace and love. Earth. Here, explore yourself.
Earth, we are.
Thank you. Earth, we are. And I'm talking with...
I am Earth.
And you are Earth.
Awareness.
And you are Earth. And you're creating another item right now. What is it that you're writing now?
This is Miles to Happiness. Is there's no miles. It's here and now.
And it looks like and you have your artwork displayed on the cement with this kind of a vertical display device. How are folks responding to your art?
They like it so far.
And are you able to survive on this kind of art?
No.
And you do it because...
Well, I'm surviving. I've survived, but I have to get help, and I have to, like, you know, it's...
It isn't self-sustaining. You don't get enough each day to pay the rent.
No, God, no. I wish. But maybe someday.
How long have you been doing it?
4 years.
And how would you describe what you do?
When I take it out to sell it, it's a lot of work setting up. You know, when I do this display thing, it takes time to set up and break down, and everything's collected.
It looks like you've collected driftwood, and then you put some time into both creating...
trying to put out a positive message to the people, and basically I want to help people realize that they are Earth, conscious awareness, and that we need to worry about our being here. As basically, we don't need to fly rockets to Mars, because we need to be Earth traveling through space, and that's what we are. And it's a bad idea to do what they're doing. You know what I mean? Like, basically, I asked in Emeryville with a tribute painting, and I asked through the wind to the spirit of man that walked the land before me, help me find faith, you know, and help me find myself. What am I? What's going on here? And things started to happen after that, and I realized that I'm Earth, and it's real important to keep existing. Come back.
Thank you, Earth.
You get to come back. But Earth's... It's like people think, oh, Earth will just wipe us out and then keep going. But we are Earth's conscious awareness, along with every consciousness on the planet. And we are half plant.
Those we don't eat or destroy, of course.
Right. So we have, you know... We have people that don't... Basically, they just think that... They're an animal on a planet when we are the planet's awareness. Earth's alive and we're part of it. It's like, it's obvious.
And I'm going to leave it there, but I'll give you the last word.
Aloha.
Adios.
Love is gravity.
Love would be a good thing.
Love.
Thank you.
I don't know what to say. Like, I want to.
And sort of as a final close down of the show, and coming up next, it's From the Cream to the Dregs with Uncle Dennis. Let's do a little more street listening at the Food Not Bombs meal on November 27th.
I'm coming from Austin. They're tearing up Austin. As of about 3-4 years ago, they sent over all the new jobs, all the new construction jobs from LA over there. So last I heard, which I've been gone from there a little over a year now, they had like 11 or 13 out of the 15 people in the U.S. that are qualified to train other people for the big construction cranes that dig deep into the ground. They're over there in Austin. They just finished the tallest building west of the Mississippi over there.
How do you like Santa Cruz?
I love Santa Cruz. I've been here for 5 days now, and I'm going to have a really hard time leaving here. So, thank you, Santa Cruz.
And your name is?
Rana Ghana.
Thank you, Rana Ghana. Any reports from the street? Any street reports? No? Any reports from the street?
Huh?
Any street reports?
God's face?
For free radio, any street reports?
Oh, no, that I know.
Oh, thank you. So I'm talking with
Karen.
And Karen, you're serving at Food Not Bombs here, but you're also, you have some news about the Standing Rock protests.
Well, actually, they don't call it a protest. They call it water protecting. And the people there at Standing Rock, it's 28 degrees during the day. In North Dakota today, it was 28 degrees. And they have been pelted with water cannons by the goons.
Goons? You mean the officers of the law?
Well, I don't know that they're absolutely. I don't know that they're real officers. That they're not behaving like that. Camps have been raided. Children have been injured with rubber bullets to the face. It's horrible.
Are these accounts you're getting from the papers or from direct conversations?
The pictures are all over the internet. You can see for yourself.
So that's where you're getting it from.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it isn't happening. I'm just wondering what your source is.
Yeah. Many sources. Many.
When are you heading for Standing Rock yourself?
Most of everything,
yeah. This is all the way. It's pretty much empty.
I hear Curtis Rutherford is headed for Standing Rock.
Yes, he is, and he's collecting supplies. He plans to leave on the 1st. And
you're going with him, perhaps?
I have to be in town for a while, but perhaps later. They are in need of firewood. They're in need of winter blankets, food. A lot of people generously donated lots of food, but it's getting down, and they're going to need more food, flashlights, sleeping bags.
How can people donate to this here in Santa Cruz, to the Curtis Rutherford expedition?
Find Curtis on the street if you know. Do you know his phone number?
Follow Your Heart is an